Are you ready for a kick in the aspirations? Welcome to the podcast that brings you cutting-edge sales and business insight, along with a healthy dose of inspiration and a few laughs. Now, here's your host, Rob Liano.
What is up? It's Rob Liano, and welcome to A Kick in the Aspirations. And we are at part two of my interview with Ben Gay III, author of The Closer, sales legend. And this is really an exciting second half that is a must listen to if you're in sales or starting a business and focusing on goals, because the insight includes stories from him meeting legends like Napoleon Hill, Zig Ziglar, and Earl Nightingale, why you should stick to your daily goals even if you make $14 million in one day, that failure happens and it's perfectly okay. If you're just starting out in sales, there's a tip for you. If you hit a sales plateau, there's a tip for you. If you're already a sales rock star, there's a tip for you. And lastly, is every goal really achievable? The answer is yes and no. So thanks for listening, and here we go. We should talk about that a little bit, because you have literally touched the hem of the garment, if I may go with a Bible biblical reference, of so many of the greats. Can you just maybe give us insight into who, and then maybe a little nugget about each one? I know Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale, and there are probably many more, but that would be really interesting for our listeners, I'm sure.
Well, Dr. Hill was given to me as a birthday gift August 22nd. It's coming right up, by the way, for those of you who want to get your presents in early. August 22nd, 1966 or 7, I'm not sure, one of those birthdays.
Sure.
William Penn Patrick knocked on my office door, which he didn't have to since he owned the door, but he was courteous. He opened the door, and standing next to him was this little old man. And I said, "Hi, how are you?" And I stood up thinking, "Oh, my God, not another one." Bill would always run into these old friends that he knew back in the days of Nutribio, when he and Jim Rohn and Bill Bailey and Earl Shove and all were working together. He'd bump into these old friends. And since he was doing well, he wanted to do them a favor. And frankly, he wanted to show off for them a little bit. You know, right. I can start a company. I just snap my fingers and so on. We got Bob Cummings vitamins that way. Bob Cummings was the old movie actor. He was the spokesperson for Nutribio. Bob Cummings arrives at my door one day, and I knew him. I knew the face from television. And I said, "Bob Cummings, my God." And then Bill said, "Meet your new challenge." So I had to design a whole company around Bob Cummings.
Oh, wow.
So when I saw this little old man, I thought, oh, good, multi-level wheelchairs. You know, how am I going to turn this into a business? So I went over. I said, "Hi, my name's Ben Gay." And before he could say anything, Bill said, "Ben, this is Dr. Napoleon Hill." And I said, "Oh, Dr. Hill." And he said, "Call me Nappy." Dr. Hill was dead a year before I could utter the words Nappy. Now I can't, but I couldn't say. I said, "Dr. Hill, I can't do that." "No, no, call me Nappy." So I discovered 50 different ways to talk with him without ever using Dr. Hill, because I'd get corrected and never saying Nappy.
Right.
Well, the reason he was there, he named Bill Patrick the fifth most important person in the world in some book that he had just written, along with Thomas Edison and various people. And he was there because Bill said, "This is a few days early, but this is your birthday gift. I've hired Dr. Hill to be," we didn't use the term coach back then, but he said, "to be your mentor." Today we might call it a coach. And he said, "Here's the deal. He is available to you with a plane ticket or a phone call, or you can hop in the Lear and go see him, whatever you want. He's available to you, and nothing you ever say to him will be repeated to me. You need somebody that you can voice your concerns and your worries without fear of losing your job."
Wow, brilliant.
And it really was. And I tested him. I won't bore you with how I did. Sometimes when we meet, I'll tell you over dinner. But I tested it because I really didn't believe it. I told Dr. Hill something that I knew would drive Bill Patrick up the wall. and it never came back.
That's great.
To me. So
the trust factor.
Last 2.5 years of of Dr. Hill's life. He worked for me as a friend, a mentor, a voice on the phone, stayed at the house on a regular basis whenever he was out, and so on. And you want to spill over into to Earl Nightingale. I was telling somebody one day in Chicago at a seminar, or telling the group about one weekend when J. Douglas Edwards, the great sales trainer, Earl Nightingale, and Dr. Hill were all house guests. It wasn't a big plan. It wasn't a, you know, a metaphysical group. They all were just in town. And I prefer, we had a big house. I preferred to have them there than having to go to a hotel and pick them up and so on. So the question inevitably is, you had Dr. Hill and Earl Nightingale. And what, my God, what was it like? And I said, well, it was nice, you know, the good weather. We went out on the boat two or three times. We did, you know. But tell us the one thing you remember. Well, I had a professional pool room, full bar, game room type thing. And I said, the one thing I remember from that long weekend more than anything else is none of them could shoot pool worth a darn. I tried playing customer pool, you know, where you deliberately lose, and we'd still be there playing. There was no way to lose to these three.
Wow.
It's like they'd never seen Dr. Hill was old. I'll spot you that.
Right.
Earl had thick glasses, maybe had a depth perception problem. And Doug Edwards was so arrogant, he wouldn't take cues about how perhaps, you know, you can't shoot through another ball. You have to get around and so on. So, what people were picturing was we're all sitting around in white robes saying wise things to each other.
Yes.
Earl, by the time I met him, had been bankrupt three times, personally and corporately, and had come back. So he wanted to make sure. I got a call one day. We were putting lead the field with Holiday Magic, lead the field with Stay Power Motor Oil. It was lead the field with Bob Cummings, by, you know, private label, but it was lead the field in all of our organizations. It was a huge order. I didn't realize how huge, because I thought that Nightingale Conant was big.
Right.
They were hanging on by their fingertips. So one day the vice president's S on the end of the company called me on a conference call, I guess, or extension anyway. And they said, you know, that thing we're going to launch would lead the field. And all. I said, yeah, I'm really excited about it. And they said, boy, we are too. We need to get that role. And I said, we've got it. You know, we're designing the literature and everything. And I'm making up dates because I don't remember.
Sure.
But we've got it ready to go June 1st. You know that. I promise. My word is my bond. And I said, no, here's the problem, Ben. We won't be in business June 1st if you don't place the order now.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And I say, Earl Nightingale, the voice of God, won't be in business. You know, they said he's been down this path before. He's going down it again. We're having a rough time in business. So I placed the order 4 or 5 months early and literally saved their company while taking that material and saving or building our companies. Because I didn't have to become a guru or have a training program. I just said, here, play these records.
Right.
So that was in Dr. Hill had his personal problems. They've sort of become known over the years. I'm not saying this to put any of them down. I just told you I lost my big house and had my cars towed away and drove into town.
And
with
me too. Oh, I'm car repossessed, and you know, we walk out and go, oh, and you know, there's a joke from back in the day. What do you call a drummer without a girlfriend? Homeless.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was literally, my car got repossessed, and my mom at the time bought me a car on a credit card, and it was humbling and horrible. And amazing and terrible at the same time, because it was like, wow. So, you know, and how often is failure associated or the catalyst for success? And then the confidence that, you know what, I've made that money, I can do it again. It's actually really an amazing mindset to know that there's no limits and there's no lack, really, because money is in such abundance. I mean, I went to Nashville and the skyline, there's actually a joke, the skyline is now cranes because they're building so much. And if you look at Dubai and what they're building there, it's really unbelievable. The world is overflowing. You know, I always say, you know, God will overflow your cup, so grab a big one, right? It's not half full. It's overflowing. And you need to tap into it. And you need to know that you can and you have a talent and passion to do that. And you might hit struggles and you might fail and you might go bankrupt, and that's okay. There's nothing worse than not trying. And it's okay if you do fail, because as long as you learn from it and then shift gears, and you know, you can't change the wind, but you can change your sails, right? Is that a Jim Rohn thing?
It's Jim Newman from Pace, but Jim Rohn and so many of us. One of the problems with being my age, and I got started very young. So the people we talk about, like they were my good buddies, they were. But they most of them were old enough to be my father. The day I was born, Zig was in the Navy. But Zig and I started making serious money September 15th, 1965, a Wednesday in Atlanta, Georgia, at 1447 Peachtree Street, Suite 300. Wow. It was also the day I was given that record and a copy of Think and Grow Rich by a guy named Bill Dempsey. So Zig had more experience. He was 18 years older. He'd given some talks. He was selling cookware, but he'd never had a big payday. So he and I started out together. So I talk about these people like they were contemporaries. They were business-wise, but they were really more like, even though they worked for me, they were more like father figures. Sure, it would be like having your dad work for you. Sometimes it was a little embarrassing. I would hate to go to my father and say, you got to get on a plane and be here and do this and so on. I don't think I could have done it. But with them, they were just biologically removed enough where I could.
Plus, it's a partnership, you know. So, and it's, there's always a different dynamic between family, for the most part, and business partners. So, I love this, man. There's so much good stuff going on here. I can't thank you enough. So, I'm going to ask you two more questions, I think, and then I know we want to talk about your forthcoming book, which is really exciting. So, I'm going to flip these over. I'm going to ask this one. So you can respond to one or all of the three components of this one.
You have to help me remember them.
I will. What advice would you give to the following people? Someone just starting out in their career, someone who has a career established but is stuck in average, or someone who might already be successful currently. And it could be the same answer or same advice for all three. You could choose one. The floor is yours.
To someone starting out, I would encourage them to get serious fast. If I was talking to myself, I would, because I'm ever asked that, you know, what would you tell the younger Ben Gay? And the answer is get serious faster. I could have been doing well before September 15th, 1965, but the truth is I wasn't. I was first here, first there, first there, but in little bitty games. It didn't amount to anything. When I joined Holiday Magic Cosmetics, which is the company we're sort of alluding to that all these people were involved in, they said, you got to learn this script and you got to do this, and you got to do this and so on. And I didn't, because I'm Mr. Personality. I've always been able to just sort of glide through life and make jokes about my name. You know, my name's Ben Gay. Don't rub it in. You're Ben Gay the third. Are you going to name your son Ben Gay the fourth and have him put up with all that? No, we decided to name him Absorbing Junior. So that little tap dance has gotten me through a whole lot of things to my detriment, frankly, because I never had to get serious. I was voted most popular and funniest in my senior class in high school. And I thought, isn't that great? Looking back, it was probably the worst thing that ever could happen to me. If I'd been voted most likely to fail, maybe I would have gotten serious. But anyway, after 6 months, I was in the business. Zig was starting to make some money. My running buddy and I, James H. Rucker Jr., the greatest salesman who ever lived, we hadn't made a dime, not in 6 months. So one day we walked in, and I don't mean made a dime in profit. Not a dime had changed hands. I didn't even sell my mother lipstick. I don't know how come that didn't cross my mind, but somehow not a dime. And we had $5,000 invested. That's in 1965 dollars. So it's pretty close to $50,000 today. And Rucker and I were making $100 a week. $50,000, what call that a thousand, but you know, it was a significant amount of money. And one day we walk into the Georgian Terrace Hotel where we were holding meetings in Atlanta. And Bill Dempsey, my sponsor, met me at the door and he said, Ben, how are you? I said, I'm fine. He said, who you got with you tonight? And I said, we don't have anybody. He said, do you know why? And I said, no. And he said, because you haven't learned the recruiting script like I asked you to 6 months ago. I said, well, you know, it'll all work out. He said, I don't think so. And then he sort of stepped in my way and he said, I don't want you to come to the meetings anymore. And I said, you know, boiled down, my answer was something to do with $5,000. I was paying, my dues to the council to rent the big room. I don't think I had the nerve to say, you can't stop me, but I was saying, please, you can. Yeah. He said, what can I do? And he said, you can learn the scripts. He said, you don't know how to recruit anybody. You haven't learned the script. There is a script available. You don't know the opportunity meeting to give it, so you're of no help to us. The same people have to give the meeting night after night after night when they would rather be working with their people. So you have to learn the 45-minute word-for-word script. And then after the meeting, the film says, turn to the person who brought you here and ask how you can get started in holiday magic. The lights come up and you turn to your people, except you don't have any. So you turn to other people's people and try and help. And you screw them up because you haven't learned the closes. There are six of them, Ben. I gave them to you day one and told you to memorize them, but you haven't done that because you're too busy. And then you haven't, he said, I promise you, you haven't learned the post-sell script, but I'll give you that because there's no reason for you to know a post-sell script because you have to post-sell somebody you've sold.
Oh my gosh.
So he put his hand on my shoulder, I guess guided Rucker with sort of like those two Scotty magnet thing, you know, everywhere one went, the other one went, and guided us to the door. And I said, how do I get back in? He said, learn the scripts. When you're ready to come to my office, stand in front of my desk and do every script that we have, and I just laid them out for you, then you can come back. And not until. So 2 or 3 weeks probably went by. As fast as I could memorize and get it right, because he had said word for word, and I made a call, called him up to suite 300 again and stood in front of his desk, and I gave him the recruiting presentation, the opportunity meeting, the six closes, and the post-sale word for word, about an hour and a half total of memorization.
Wow, that's amazing.
He said, good. He said, now you can come back to the meeting starting tonight, which means you better get out and meet some people. Maybe you could bring some people with you. So I went out, and I don't know if it was that night, but within a night or two, I walked in the room with five people, which caught Dempsey's attention because there were five people he didn't know standing near me. So something had changed. I didn't give the meeting that night. That was about a week away before I did that. But I sat there obediently and watched the film and listened to the meeting. And when the lights came up, I turned to the people sitting next to me, got them in a circle, started drawing circles on the legal pad, and got all five of them to commit to a $2,500, the first step, a $2,500 investment. One, I think, took a week or two to close because he had to go get the money. Mm-hmm. But five out of five.
Wow.
And from five people who I brought, and I post-sold them all. Nobody ducked out. They all paid. And Dempsey came over, put his hand on my shoulder, and said, see, do you understand now?
So
now, we made $101,000, zero the first 6 months, $101,000 part-time the last 6 months, which may or may not impress your listeners, but remember, we're talking 1965. We made $1 million in today's money part-time in 6 months. I didn't want to give up my $100 a week job with my father. I didn't want to risk that. So see your new people. Get serious. The people this morning I saw an email from a guy who is in timeshare, and he said, I just went through training. What should I do? I didn't ask him who he worked for. I said, you should do exactly what they told you to do.
Right.
Exactly. Word for word. Right. I started, if you could scream through a keyboard, I'd be screaming at him because I've been there. You know, what can I do now? What should I do? So that's if you haven't made it. If you've made it and you've hit a little stumbling block, if you've ever been successful, go back to basics. Invariably, it's because they drifted off track and they need to get back to basics. If they don't have any basics to go back to, A, get serious about it, study the top producer in that company, do whatever he or she is doing, assuming they're honest. Sometimes the top producer's a crook. They won't be there long, so don't worry about them. The highest producing, honest person you can find, study them, stay on them, and then set up a system. I don't come in the morning and go, I wonder what I'm going to do today. What I'm going to do today, about half of it was decided probably a year ago when I can't get to it. I have a calendar. It looks like a hymnal. Mm-hmm. And if you and I make an appointment to talk 6 months from now or do another interview, it goes in the thing. And over time, almost every page is full before the day starts. Then there are those things I do every day. So I have them on a separate sheet of paper that we run off on the copy machine, and I cross them out. Sense of accomplishment, cross them out. So you develop a system and set goals. Now, people watching this will roll their eyes at that point. Oh, he's going to tell us to set goals. Yes, set goals. Dr. Hill wrote in Think and Grow Rich, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. And yes. We started arguing as only a 25-year-old punk can do with a grown guru. We started arguing about that. And I said, well, what if they're crazy? So over several lunches, we batted it back and forth. And finally, we agreed. Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve, so long as he's not crazy. And so long as it's specific, measurable, and attainable. Yes. Well, you can attain anything. No, you can't.
Yeah, you can't. You can't grow a horn on your head. I've always said that. But you wouldn't want to. The whole point, like I love to just, let me just follow up on that, is John Maxwell, who I love, you know, you must know John Maxwell, he said, you know, when people say you could be anything you want, he goes, what if I wanted to be a ballerina? Now, you know what John looks like. So he uses it as a joke, but I think he's actually wrong, because he wouldn't have the desire to be a ballerina. However, what he has a desire and passion for, he probably can achieve that. And I think that's really important to differentiate. You're not going to want the crazy thing. You're looking at, I want to be a musician, or I want to teach people, or I want to be a coach, or whatever it is. You have that passion for a reason, and you are fully equipped to do so as long as you put it into play, like you're saying, and plan it, act on it, get learn fast, man, and act fast. Because, you know, we have this very short window of life as it is. We're fortunate to be here, and it's really a flash. You need to act. And Wayne Dyer said, one of my favorite quotes, don't die with the music still inside of you. Yeah, and of course, being a musician, it resonates with me. But I look at my voice recorder, and I have all these ideas, and they can't just sit there. So I would say to our listeners is, don't let it go another day. Don't live with regrets. You regret the things you didn't do more than the things you did do. So that's how I look at it. So that's a great point. So you touched on that. Do you want to hit on someone who might already be very successful, or do we want to incorporate what you said, or do you have another thought?
Well, I have just one little thing for somebody who's already successful. Excellent. But let me double back just for a second to specific, measurable, and attainable.
Yes.
Everybody wants to I want to be a millionaire. I'm so inspired. I've come to this seminar and I'm leaping up and down, as Jim Rohn said to a person.
Yep.
Jim Rohn said to somebody one day, they were leaping up and down with a copy of Think and Grow Rich under their arm, and I'm going to be successful. I'm going to be successful. And Jim said, you know, at some point you're going to have to stop leaping up and down and do something.
Right.
So, you know, but specific, I want to be a millionaire or I want to be rich, isn't specific.
That's vague. It's vague. Yep.
It's vague. You know, what is rich to you, and so on. Right. So a few years ago, I set a goal of making $1 million a year, separate from stock value, real, you know, rental property, and so on. Just me, $1 million a year as a commissioned salesperson. Now, part of that's profit, obviously, but from operating the business. So I thought, okay, now if I do this like I've done it in the past, 6 months from now, I will check and I won't have half of it done.
Right.
You know, and then there's only 6 months to do more than I didn't do in those 6 months. Right. So I'll just scrap it. Next January 1st, we'll start over. But I remembered my lunches with Dr. Hill and the little argument I sort of won. Specific. $1 million a year is $2,739 a day and pocket change 7 days a week.
Right.
That keeps it right under your nose. Today, when I came in the office this morning, I rounded up to 2,800, and some smart aleck said to me the other day, well, what are you going to do with the other 22,000? I went to one of those math geniuses. I said, tips.
Yeah.
Just for tips.
That's right. Just for tips.
Yeah. But so I say $2,800 a day. Now, I had one day a few years ago where I made in profits, commissions, rewards, a little over $14 million.
Wow.
And a friend of mine said, Ben, you're done for 14 years. I said, no. I got a long flight, got to get back to the United States. And when I land, I got to make $2,800.
Right.
So here's the little secret about specific there. If you want to make a million, it's $2,739 a day. Call it $2,800. And if you make $2,800 today, the goal is $2,800 tomorrow. If you make $14 million today, the goal is $2,800 tomorrow. If you make zero today, yeah, don't crush yourself by doubling it. Make it $2,800 a day. Be like a professional golfer. The only shot that counts in my entire career is the one I'm standing over right now, right, with a golf club.
That's right.
Nothing before, nothing after makes any difference. Specific, measurable, that's certainly measurable. It fits that. And attainable. When I was the attitude coach for the astronauts, Apollo 15, 16, 17, we were talking about goals one day. And I said, well, here's one of the things. For instance, I can set goals, but I can't be an astronaut. They said, why not? And I said, because at that time, almost 30 years old, I don't have a college education, to say the least. I was there 3 weeks. But I was elected president of freshman class, Rob, so let's not be making fun of me. I just wasn't there when they swore the president in. It turned out that was a month later or something.
Yeah.
But specific, measurable, attainable, I said, I can't be an astronaut. I'm almost 30. I don't have a college education. I'm not a scientist. They were starting then to get away from the jet jockeys. They were going to people who actually do something when they got there. I don't have a pilot's license. I'm not a test pilot. I'm not a this, I'm not a that, and so on. And I convinced them I couldn't be an astronaut. I think it was about a year ago, the phone rings from a friend of mine who's now retired from NASA, but used to be in the upper echelons. He said, Ben, I've got good news for you. And he said, what? He said, you can be an astronaut. I said, it's worse today than when I told them that story. He said, yeah, but today it's $24 million and you have a seat.
Oh, yes.
So he said, put up or shut up. I said, okay, I wanted to be an astronaut. Now I've decided not to be one.
Right. There you go.
Because Gigi, I don't think, would go for 24, risk my life and $24 million right out of the bank.
Yeah, as a test pilot. So. It still needs some work done there on the consumer flights into space, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, let other people be the guinea pigs.
So with people who are already successful, there's that saying we all say to one another when things go bad, your mother dies, you go bankrupt, whatever, and this too shall pass.
Right.
I like to remind my successful friends, having been there, and this too shall pass.
Right.
The fact you're successful now does right not lock it in to be successful right forever. So you got to pay attention to the basics, to your daily goals, to everything like everybody else. Now, let's assume, since you were bright enough to become at least temporarily successful, you know how to do all that stuff. That's yeah locked in. Then right you have an obligation. Again, you're too young to remember, but there used to be a singer named Perry Como. And Perry Como,
I have Italian parents. Of course I know who Perry Como is.
Oh, you know who Perry Como is. There are two things I love about Perry. One, he was allergic to empty seats. He would peek out the curtains, and if he had to go get homeless people and bring them in, he wouldn't walk on stage till all the seats were full.
Wow,
he was said he was allergic. Mm-hmm. But he also taught me another lesson. He said, when you get to the top, you have a duty to send the elevator back down.
Yes.
So I spend a lot of time, more than I should probably, mentoring and helping other people. I have a coaching business I charge for, but as far as helping somebody a little bit here, there, and so on, a young man that I met at Lompoc, at the federal prison, was an 18-year-old drug dealer. Didn't have a high school education, nothing. But when I looked at him, I thought of Sam Goldwyn, the movie producer, who said, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Right.
I looked at Lamont Bowen, and I saw it, something within him. So I got him involved in a public speaking class where he quickly became a superstar, did this, did that. Gigi and I unofficially adopted him then, sort of took him under our wing. Since then, we've officially adopted him. And he just passed the bar in Maryland.
Wow.
And graduated from law school at San Francisco State University. He was second in his class. An 18-year-old drug dealer without a high school education.
Wow.
Is now a lawyer in Maryland, second in his class at San Francisco State. So Gigi says, you know, the time you spent working at San Quentin and at Lompoc and so on, it was all worth it if all you got was Lamont. And I said, I agree. On the other hand, that was 11 years out of my life.
Right.
Surely to God, there was an easier way to do it. But I can't help myself. I send the elevator back down constantly. Was doing it last night in a restaurant.
Well, that's what we're doing this for. It's, you know, free content that's empowering if you take it and are open to it, learning and functioning. And it's funny, so much of that, everyone I talk to is about giving back. You know, you go through phases. When you're younger, you want that car, and then you want the house, and then you realize there's way more than that. That's so much more valuable, and there's nothing like the reward. It goes beyond the money of helping someone. And I think that's the only reason we are actually here on this planet, is to add value to other people, because we're certainly not here to just exist, and we're definitely not here to drain people. So our true purpose for me is we are supposed to add value to others. That's exactly why I started doing this, because people were like, hey, you know, you should do a radio show. And I was like, I heard enough people tell me that I should consider it, right? So here we
maybe
are.
There's something to it.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I guess since I lost my Long Island accent, we can do it now, right? So it works out well. So I'm going to ask you one more question, but first, I want to talk about your either offer, book, update, something you have for listeners. I know you have to talk about your new book.
We'll do that, but let me back to basics. If you don't already have them, let me tell you what you ought to do. You need to get The Closers Part 1. That's the foundation of modern selling.
Yes, it
you
is.
Need to get The Closers Part 2, which shows you what sophisticated people really do with the information in this book. This book is sort of red raw, the red raw meat of selling.
Right.
Kicks the blocks and the punches.
Yes.
This book shows you what sophisticated people really do with that information. Cary Grant said the secret of acting was not to get caught at it. That's also the secret of selling. Closers Part 2 shows you how to do that. And then the book I wrote for J. Douglas Edwards, after he died, he never wrote a book, but I wrote it. It's true to his seminar teachings and my personal notes that I made while I was working with him. It's called Sales Closing Power.
So I don't have that one yet. I need to get that.
Well, don't let me get in your way.
Well, actually, the screen is in the way. I can't get to it.
But this book is sold on eBay for up to $350 per used copy.
Wow.
And one of our bright young warehouse workers found several thousand of them in a warehouse piled behind something else. So this book is, I guess, 40 years old, but brand new.
Yeah.
Get those three books. And here's the best place to get them. I'm not trying to get your money. I'm going to send you someplace. Go to Stores, S-T-O-R-E-S, Stores with an S on the end, .ebay.com/Ronzoni Books, R-O-N-Z-O-N-E. Books, all one word, capital R, capital B, but all one word, B-O-O-K-S, stores.ebay.com/Ronzoni Books. Everything I have is there at a discount, less than you can get it at my website. So I'm doing you a favor. But if you do nothing else today, whenever you hear this, years from now, get those three books.
Yes.
And now you're kind enough to bring up the other one 20 years after I should have done it. I partnered with a wonderful gentleman in Greece. This is his most recent book, and he was all over me to write The Closers Part 3. And I said, Paul, everybody wants to do that, but I've pretty much written everything I know about selling. He said, everything you know, but I know some stuff, and we can put a twist on it, and there's things I want to ask you and interview you and so on. So from that conversation came The Closers Part 3. I'm told it'll be available. It's available now for pre-order on Amazon.
Oh, and, I'm going to have to pre-order it.
Yeah, and the Kindle version or the electronic version, whatever that is, and the print version will be close behind it. But even before that, get The Closers 1, The Closers 2, and Sales Closing Power. People say to me in seminars all the time, Mr. Gay, I would give anything in the world to know about what you know about selling. I said, well, I got good news for you. It's about $80. You know, you just get these three books. Wrote it all down. For your timeshare, I wrote another book, The Art and Science Resort Sales. But for your average person, those three books, if you learn the stuff in there, you need to be redirected from time to time. You need to be re-motivated. You need to be reminded from time to time. But you will have it all. I haven't been in a sales situation in 40 years that I didn't know what to do.
Right. That's funny. I say that all the time because people always say, especially when I was in a sales realm as a trainer and wasn't selling as much, people would say,
I'm going to break your sales records. And I was like, okay. And they would challenge me on a phone call kind of thing. And I'd say, here's the reason why I'm still better than you. Because when I train 20 of you, I repeat a message 20 times. So I can still, to this day, rattle off a response if someone says, I need to speak to my spouse. And people are like, how do you still know that? I'm like, because I've said it in training so many times. We learn through repetition. So I am still a Jedi master when it comes to selling because of that repetition. And if you want to be great, it's like when you hear a song on the radio, you hear it enough that you sing along with it. You don't have to concentrate. You don't crash your car. It's the repetition that you've learned through. So pick up those books. I can vouch for 1 and 2, which are amazing. And I can't wait for 3. But if you really do want to position yourself for success, you have to be prepared. You have to learn the process, because sales is a crazy animal. You can get hired because we have a personality or you have charisma, right? Especially phone sales. Okay, we'll put them on the phones. You get minimal training. If you crash and burn, you go into the revolving door of sales. And you get frustrated, if not completely discouraged, and leave an amazing field that can create great prosperity. So you need to take it upon yourself to be responsible, accountability-wise, and learn to be great at what you do. And it's an investment of time, but it's so worth it, because it's a very rewarding career when you are able to help people and in turn make an income, and a nice income at that. So I have one more question for you, and we'll end it on this note. And I'm really excited to hear this, because from you, it's going to be, I think, an interesting answer. What are you, Ben Gay III, most grateful for?
Gigi Ronzoni.
Yes. Oh, Ronzoni. Can she make sauce?
Yeah. It's spelled with an E.
Right. Oh, okay.
The sauce is with an I.
Right.
Or the pasta is with an I.
Yeah.
But yes, can, because all good Italians can.
Yes.
But, you know, that's the real answer. But on top of that, the accident of zip code, and I hear people whining about they can't get ahead because of this or that, and they were born poor, you know, whatever. I understand that, and I don't discount it. I have already said I was lucky to be born where I was born to the people I was born to. However, and that made me want to get back to it as fast as I could. However, everything I've looked, my dad didn't sit down. I never heard my dad say, this is how you close the sale. I don't even sure he knew the term. He sold commodities, and he had a great personality and a hard work ethic. I don't think he knew if they say this, you say this, and so on. At least I never heard it mentioned in the house. So I think I could have done it no matter where I started if I got desperate enough. So accident of birth was certainly a factor in it. The other factor is I love people. I just can't meet enough people. While we've been sitting here and I'm supposedly concentrating on this, several times I've thought about that couple we met last night with their baby Jet, and how much I'm looking forward to meeting them. He, by the way, he's a contractor now in a very niche, as he said, niche market. And is making a lot of money. But what he was a guitarist in a hard rock or something that band. They were 20, some song they had was 22 on the Billboard charts and so on. And the drummer left, as they always do. The drummer left, and the recording company decided not to be a recording company anymore.
Wow.
And he said, so what I discovered in my career as a musician was to, he said, you always know how to do something. He said, I knew how to paint. That got me back into construction just before my next band. And that made me meet somebody who had this unique product with government contracts and so on. Now he's running a multi-million-dollar enterprise. But in his heart, he's standing there with the earrings, the tattoos up the arm. In his heart, he said, where's good music? They've only lived in town 12 days.
Right.
Where's the good music on the street? He wants to wheedle his way into a band and do what you guys love to do.
Yep. There's something amazing. It's funny because people, when I first spoke in front of an audience, people said, wow, you're a natural. And I'm like, I've been performing on stage since I'm 15. So it's that, you know, 10, 20 year overnight success thing.
But the intimidation factor was gone.
Yes, that's right.
You're not intimidated by seeing a lot of faces looking at you.
Right. So it's interesting. There was a lot of things that prepared me for this. I was an MC for a DJ company at weddings, where I would be the guy running the wedding. So when you combine that with, I keep knocking on my earpiece. It's funny. Italians can't talk without hands. But yeah, so it's funny how I literally, because I advise people to connect the dots on things they did in their life that they were either successful at or they really loved. Because when I look back on mine, those dots were playing drums on stage, MC for a DJ company, a couple other factors that actually allowed me to become a speaker and a trainer. And it's wild because you can literally chart it out by saying, well, you know, I love doing that. So how can I apply it now? Because so many people hate their jobs and they know they have that little glimmer of fire inside them saying, I could be doing something else. So my suggestion is follow that and look backwards and see how you can move forwards from the successes and maybe the passions and learn from the mistakes and be grateful.
Totally agree.
Because gratitude is awesome. So in closing, pun intended, is there anything else you'd like to share, Ben? And I can't thank you enough for taking your time. It's actually went longer than I expected, but we could probably do 10 parts with the knowledge that you have. And maybe we'll follow up in the future with it. But in closing, is there anything else, a parting shot, so to speak?
No, other than I'm assuming 99% of your audience is in selling. And so if you're in selling, let me tell you the good news. Whether you deserve it or not, whether you're educated or not, no matter what your past has been, you are in a situation where you can make more money than just about anybody else on earth, any normal human being, maybe not a Rockefeller or whatever right off the bat, but selling doesn't have any real requirements. All I want to know if you come to work for me is, can you close sales? Yeah. Honestly, without causing me trouble. In other words, a lot of people close sales, but they're crooks.
Yeah.
But can you close sales honestly and ethically and make me proud to have you part of my team? One of my vice presidents in charge of sales years ago, his name was Bob Pettit. He's now passed away. Bob said we were having dinner one night and over some meal, something came up about education. I said, I don't have an education. I have what the state of Georgia required I have. You had to get a high school thing or at least hang around until the 12th grade ended. And so I didn't have one. And I said, none of you have a college education. And Bob Pettit exploded, which was not his nature. And he said, how can you say that? Don't say that in front of these people. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I have a master's degree in art, and I'm this close to a PhD and something else. I forget what it was. And so I said, I'm sorry, Bob. If you recall, when I hired you several years ago, that never came up. It was never mentioned.
Right.
I was just studying you, trying to figure out if your personality would translate from art. He was a commercial artist and did some ads for us over into selling. All I want to know is, could you close sales?
Right.
And if you had never been near a school of any level, any grade, but could close sales, you'd be sitting where you are today.
Right.
But I'm pleasantly surprised to know you have a master's degree. I never knew that. In fact, it doesn't show, Bob.
Well, it's funny because I've learned more out of high school than in all the years after than in school. That's how I feel. I just because I've kept reading, learning, and I have a desire for. My mom handed me a book when I was a kid and said it's a precious gift, and it's so true. Just because you could read so many different things, learn so many different things, whether it's fiction for fun or obviously self-improvement, you should always be reading and applying. And, you know, they say knowledge is power, but the application of knowledge is power. So learn it, apply it, and earning and learning go hand in hand, right?
Absolutely. I grew up, my mother subscribed to the Reader's Digest, and they were stacked on the back of the toilet.
Did you read all those comics were the best part?
Oh, sure.
At that time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The laughter is the best
medicine.
That's
it. Laughter is the best medicine. Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And each chapter in there was good for one sitting, basically,
right.
Except for the book section at the back that ran a little longer.
Yeah.
So at dinner, I was always asked, well, what did you read today? And I said, well, you know, the teacher didn't assign anything. Well, I did on the back of the toilet.
Right.
There's plenty of you. What'd you read out of there today? And so I learned you go to the bathroom, you better come out knowing more than when you went in.
Wow, that's excellent. It's funny because a lot of people do their best thinking in the shower. Yeah. Maybe that's why. So you're reading.
Yeah, the trick is you got to get out of the shower, dry off, and do something.
Right. Of course. That's right. And it's so funny how you mentioned one thing I want to add. You mentioned where Jim Rohn said someone's jumping up and down and they have to act. John Maxwell, to give him another nod, said there's a difference between a motivational teacher and a motivational speaker. A speaker gets you motivated. You wake up on Monday, you don't know what to do. A teacher gets you motivated with instruction so that you will know what to do to take that motivation and run with it. So motivation's not enough. That could be our parting shot. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Ben, I cannot thank you enough. We're going to have to arrange where I can fly out and take you to dinner. In fact, we'll probably be talking to everyone at the tables around us because I am just like that as well, in case you didn't pick up on that. And, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Rob. It was an honor, my honor.
You got it, buddy.
Bye.